It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded July 3rd, 2023. And this time around, our Barry Pod guest is Napa City Council member Liz Alessio. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So there have been a few things in recent weeks that have popped up on the city council's agenda, in some cases popped up in the news media, and they're yet to come to the city council, really.
Right.
But generating a little bit of a, I wonder how that's going to work out. And there's been a couple of these where I looked at and said, boy, being a council member when this issue is up is going to be challenging. Let's begin. The first one that was kind of surprising and rough around the edges was the issue about not having a fireworks display.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're recording this Barry Pod on the day before the 4th of July, and by the time some people listen to it, we will have had a fireworks display anyway.
Right.
But something happened there that was unusual, and in my perception, maybe there was a communications issue around this having no fireworks versus having fireworks. Can you shed some light on how that played out and what was motivating the idea of not having fireworks display?
I'll do my best. It was really unusual that something like this was not brought to council, one, for discussion and on the agenda, and to include the public access to make public comment one way or the other on how they feel about fireworks. So I was really taken off guard. And really initially just so disappointed for the community. I know thousands of people that go out there, families, they love the fireworks show. It's a long tradition. Celebrating our Independence Day to me as a mother of a Marine who was deployed 3 times, who supported our active duty veterans through care packages since 2008. I was frankly, as you probably read in the paper, quote unquote, disappointed. I was disappointed for the community. I was disappointed for all that fight for the continued freedom. And if you look back in history, what that, what this really means, claiming our own independence and the Declaration of Independence and how hard it was to get there. So, I was disappointed and I was a little surprised. So, here we are. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, our local organizations and community groups, many of them are from Napa, and they also heard the disappointment coming from, a large section of the community. My initial concerns was if you don't have fireworks, people are left to their own devices. I worked at Queen of the Valley for 20 years, 10 years in the hospital. I actually worked a little bit in the ER for a few years. And, injuries over the holiday, over the fireworks is a real thing. Once the fireworks became illegal and there became a public show, that really made a big difference. So having access to that, I felt like it was a safety issue too. When it comes to a time where we need more reasons for joy, for community building, community spirit, and coming together, I want as many opportunities for our residents as possible. So there's just a lot of reasons that I was frankly disappointed. There was mentioned that the staff made the decision based on pollution and public health, public safety. Is it public safety? And noise anxiety. There's some other reasons that they gave. I chair the Napa County Climate Action Committee. We just did an inventory on the climate pollutants. This doesn't even hit the radar, it's never a mention. So I was curious about that. With my past experience with public health, asthma is an issue that Napa has and has had for many, many decades. I mean, a long, long time. Again, with the community health needs assessment, even with asthma, fireworks, a 20-minute show once a year has never even been something that public health has discussed.
It seems like the least of any issues of concern. The first issue of concern for most people is starting fires.
Right.
Fortunately, this year we're not in high fire danger on the 4th of July. The issues about animals being driven crazy, I understand that.
But again,
it's one night of the year. And,
right. It's 20 minutes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, but what about? We can play that game all day long. But like you said, the fact that this didn't come as an issue to the council is pretty odd, and it made me very curious because that's not normal.
It's not. I've never, you know, we have such, our city manager is incredible. We have dedicated staff and our leadership. I really think that the intentions were the best intentions. And I just personally feel like they missed the mark. Yeah. I have compassion for especially the animals that it really does. It upsets dogs, not all dogs, but certain dogs. Mm-hmm. And I have compassion for that. But I just, you know, I also have compassion for everything else I already said, for our community-wide and a longstanding tradition we've always had. Even the firefighters, I heard from firefighters, and there's one firefighter that now retired. He's got a very active Facebook, you know, site. And, you know, and I even heard from firefighters, it's not a fire concern in that area. These are professionally, you know, orchestrated technicians. They know it's coming out of the expo, over downtown, like over the river. So there's really very little risk there, is what I heard. So
fires usually come from amateur fireworks being shot off in rural areas where there's lots of trees and brush and leaves and things like that.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. And the last thing I want to add one thing too is that, you know, Mayor Garcia, who is also quoted in the paper from American Canyon, and he and I have talked since, he said one year they didn't have a fireworks show and there were more fireworks all over the town, which again, for me, I'm thinking injuries in the ER and more noise for those animals, mm-hmm. more, you know, than there would be if it was just one centralized 20-minute show.
Yeah. Agreed. So just one more question on this topic. Back when I was connected to the city and even before that doing radio,
you
would hear almost every year or every other year, it's like, we don't really have any money for this. Some community group needs to step up. The price tag for this professional fireworks show is?
I think they said it would be about $35,000. Okay. The city manager told me this was not a financial issue.
Okay. So the question that I have is $35,000 is literally a drop in the bucket of what the city spends. Why isn't it just locked in as a budget item? Why has it always been this controversial thing that keeps getting taken out, put back in?
I don't understand. I thought it was.
Funded by the Parks and Recreation Foundation at some point. Like it couldn't,
like
the city with millions of dollars in revenue can't fund $35,000 for this thing. That's obviously
important
to a lot of people.
The city can. And it's, I never even thought it was a question, to be honest with you. So I was surprised, A, it was a question, and then two, it was decided on without council and public input. So it's not the budget item. I wouldn't want it to come through the Park and Rec Foundation because that's really scholarships for kids for swimming lessons and soccer and other activities. RTOT is, you know, just over $30 million projected to increase. You know, having it go out of, the TOT that goes out of the general fund is a perfect place for it to continue.
Right.
After this happened and I had a conversation with our city manager, I said, you know, I'd really like to bring this up on our next council meeting and see if council will support bringing this officially to a future council meeting to discuss next works to ensure we have a fireworks show. Whether it's fireworks, a drone show, I've seen really cool drone shows,
a laser show. Yeah.
So we can look at alternatives. I'm sure the drone show would be really expensive, but again, might be super cool. And might mitigate some of those other concerns. So when I did bring it up to council, it was unanimous. Everybody agreed. So staff has been asked to research this and bring us back information so we can make a decision which show or what type of show we will have in 2024.
Very good. So let's spend some time on this development proposal that came out in the Napa Valley Register. It was publicized there prior to going to Planning Commission, I think. Describing what the developer of an area we think of as the Oxbow South was one time the South Gardens and is now the location of a parking lot and a pretty popular thing called Napa Yard at the Oxbow, right? when that development proposal came out, I think a lot of people had a reaction to what I had of how can you possibly put more density into this little chunk of First Street that already has so much going on, and these other hotel proposals that are already entitled and are somewhere down the line probably going to happen, several of them. It's a two-lane street. There's only so many square feet where you can create a parking space. Mm-hmm. It seems a little much, I guess, everything that's laid out there.
I think they're swinging for the fences.
Okay. Good way to put it. It has not come to you yet as a
no.
council. Has not gone through planning completely.
They just, Planning Commission just had a study session. So this is great. The great part is that the planning commissioners have been voicing that they really want to have study sessions with developers, because what has happened is that everything is kind of baked, and by the time it gets to the planning commission, they're kind of boxed in a corner, and the developers already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in many cases to get to that point with staff. And so the Planning Commission asked us to see things earlier and be able to help and let the public have an opportunity to share their concerns, so developers can be more successful and council and Planning Commission and council can be more successful in meeting the desires and the needs of the residents and the city. So that's what they did. So they just had a study session. There was three commissioners there. There was two already planned vacations because it was June. And it was actually very, very good. So you can find this meeting online. It's recorded, and you'll learn a lot about what the first draft looks like. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot.
Yeah. And I know that the plan addresses parking, because it would replace the lost parking that first cut you think, okay, that's the problem. But they're planning to replace the parking. That having been said, my take on it, having spent just a little time at Napa Yard, and I'm not a proponent of that business. I don't even know who owns it. I'm not connected to it in any way. But the first time I was there, it was 100% local people.
I know, I love it.
Almost 100% families.
Yeah.
There was a group having an end of Little League season party mm-hmm. near us.
I know, it's great.
And I thought, this is one of the best spaces in Napa.
Yeah.
And it's not enough. It now has to be a multi-story, there have to be multi-story mm-hmm. buildings here. There has to be retail. There has to be condos. It's like, when do we, Liz, you grew up here. When does this stop?
You know, Oxbow is a diamond in the rough still. It's really starting to shine more and more. And it's been interesting to see the evolution of downtown Napa, and now the evolution of Oxbow. And they're going to continue to change and evolve. And I believe continue to, make downtown a really more spectacular space, highlight our river. And I do want to make sure that it's still accessible to the people who live here. And so I love the yard. I'm hoping, they have an agreement. They had an understanding with the developer that he had plans for this. He's been talking about these plans. Even when I started running in 17, he asked me to come out there and look at it. And it was really, really rough kind of ideas back then. But, he bought that property to do something with it at some point. The Napa Yard knew about that. And there's an understanding there. What I think it does is it shows that we, in terms of the success of Napa Yard and how much you love it and I love it. Again, I love just going there and watching the kids just free play. Mm-hmm. They're like climbing on things. Mm-hmm. There's cornhole. There's people just hanging out. It's so casual. It's so comfortable and fun. And again, that view of the river from there is really special. Yeah. And again, as a kid, Napa River was not that special, but so great how it is again. So I think it's a model that I really hope that they will find a new home and continue that model, because we really, clearly, we want it and need it. Yeah. So.
And it reminds me of back when the flood project was being designed and there was a talk about turning our faces to the river instead of turning our backs to it.
Yes.
Right? Which what you just related to. Growing up as a kid, everything you didn't want to see was put down by the river, right?
Well, they used to throw, I mean, it was just a waste bin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now that this revolution has happened, the river's cleaner, everybody cares about the habitats and taking care of it. And I'm just worried that for future generations, you won't be able to find a place where you can enjoy the riverfront unless you're paying through the nose to do
it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and seeing, like you said, casual. That's something that's missing for a lot of locals. Everything is too fancy. Everything's too expensive. We need those casual, easy environments.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I had to get on my soapbox a little bit there.
No, I'm with you.
The other topic that's a hot button one is this plan for paid parking downtown. Mm-hmm. Now, we just referenced how challenging all the parking is. We understand that. For some people, it's just too much. I don't personally feel like it's that big of a problem. I don't mind walking a couple blocks.
I honestly don't think it. I can now. I have a parking spot. Everybody, sorry, but as council members, that's one of the things we do get. So if I need to park in the city parking area, I am allotted one parking spot. Mm-hmm. That said, I park downtown, all over town, pretty easily.
Right, I agree with that. For some people, it's a big deal. That's fine, but suddenly it seems sort of out of the blue. Even though I know for a fact that ideas about paid parking have been floating around for 15 years, probably.
Oh, we used to have paid parking.
Right? And it didn't take very long after the meters were taken away. Some people started saying, why don't we have paid parking? Like, well, there's a reason we didn't like it. But when that came back up, not a real positive reaction again from the local community. I doubt that people coming to visit will care if they're...
Yeah, it's not the visitors. It's not going to... Yeah.
Right? What are your thoughts? Does downtown Napa need parking meters or some kind of paid parking mechanism again?
You know, it's a big comprehensive plan that the city staff, and I haven't actually seen, they've given out, I believe there's been at least two workshops that folks have been invited to, like the Downtown Association folks, Chamber folks. As a city council member, I've not received a presentation on it, but I know it's a parking management plan. The funds that are raised will go towards maintenance and repair, security measures for parking garages and so on and so forth. I know, I see your face. That said, you know, who is it going to hurt? Is it, you know, it's where you kind of balance, right? You know, what are the benefits and what are the detriments? What are the unintended consequences? In it, there is discussion of permit parking for employees, for people who work downtown, which is great. I will tell you, for a couple of years, I was the interim executive director for the Napa County Historical Society. I got a fair amount of tickets behind in that parking lot, and they're $35 a pop if you pay them right away. And before you know it, I mean, I'm steep in work. And then it's like, I missed it and boy, they got me. So, you know, I want access for people who work downtown to have parking. I like the idea of permit parking. In terms of the residents having access, I like that extended to residents. I know that might sound like wild. Like, how do you give residents permit parking? I want them to have access. I want them to come downtown. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to think this is another barrier for me to come down, that I'm going to have to add this to my monthly allotment that I can barely afford right now. Yeah. So,
you know, a lot of communities have permit-based parking in neighborhoods. I'm thinking about Berkeley, where I've spent a little time around Berkeley Playhouse, right? Mm-hmm. Very dense, commercially and residentially, no place to park. And the school, of course,
you know.
And so people get a permit to park in their own neighborhood, and they're not going to get asked to move or whatever. That wouldn't be so hard, would it? Every local resident has a little placard on their windshield.
I would be fine with that. I mean, I just, you know, again, if people who are visiting here, the day trippers, which we love, and they really contribute to our sales tax, revenue for the city funds and what we can give back into the community. They're not going to, it's not going to matter to them, but I do worry about the folks who live here, who work here. There's a lot of financial burden on people now.
And the continuation of that thought or idea that people get, like, there's nothing for me downtown anymore as a local. They don't want me there. They want well-heeled tourists, and they're forcing me
I'll tell you, I want people downtown. I love downtown as a again, lifetime resident, was a ghost town. And I purposely will drive down on First Street from Jefferson all the way through Oxbow because it just makes me giddy. I am just so happy. When I'm downtown, I see residents, I see neighbors, friends, you know, adults, grandparents that I went to elementary school with. So, you know, I want downtown to continue to be. There are some affordable places that I go to. You know, I don't know if I can mention their names.
I don't care.
Taqueria Rosita.
Oh, yeah.
I love Taqueria Rosita. You know, I'll go there. Oh, my gosh. Where are some other places that we'll go? Anyways, I'll leave it at that. I mean, Dutch Door, they got a new place mm-hmm. that they just opened up mm-hmm. inside First Street Plaza. Mm-hmm. Aco's. I mean, we'll go to Aco's. I don't know if it's super affordable, but it's not super expensive either, you know.
All right.
So there's, you know, and just going down there and just having a good time and enjoying the live music that we're going to have in July, mm-hmm. Which I'm very excited about that. I'm at the Veterans Park. So every Friday night, there's two shows that the city is now running and managing mm-hmm. since the Chesperos have retired. But yeah, come downtown and I don't want parking to be an issue.
Last topic, homelessness. There was a story recently about the acquisition, I think it's Motel 6, right?
Yes.
That's the one on Redwood Road.
Yeah, in Solano.
Solano. And then, of course, there's the Wine Country Lodge acquisition with the concept of housing first. Homeless people don't succeed as well in getting out of homelessness by being in shelters. They do better if you give them a place to live. Mm-hmm. That's the new philosophy.
With wraparound services.
That's the
key
right.
to it.
Mm-hmm. And when that story posted, Register's story on Facebook, and there's all this negativity about these people can't change and it's mm-hmm. all about drugs and they'll destroy the place and blah, blah. This is a new way of approaching things. And because of that court ruling about not being able to take people off the street unless you have mm-hmm. a bed for them, right? That's generated a whole new approach. Mm-hmm. Are we going in a direction that's going to make a difference? Because I know our homeless population has not exactly grown by anything significant.
Right.
But we don't like seeing the tents. We don't like the hearing about the encampments being cleaned out.
And it's really, honestly, it's inhumane. Having people camp long-term without access to utilities is really inhumane. And the majority of those who are homeless have a direct connection in Napa, There was just a report released from UCSF that showed that, you know, that California, we have 30% of the nation's homeless live in California, and 50% of the nation's unhoused are also in California. It also shows that 75% of those who live in the counties where they are homeless or unhoused are from that county. And that's very true to what we see in Napa. Every person who's unhoused has a story. And many times, not always, but, you know, well, let me say this. The study also showed the driving number one reason that people become unhoused is because affordability. They can't afford to live there. That is the number one reason. For people who are chronically homeless or become chronically homeless, being homeless is traumatic. And it just adds traumas. 30% of those who are homeless there's either sexual violence they experience or just violence in general. So you're adding trauma onto sometimes being trauma, becoming unhoused or just being precariously housed, not knowing how you're going to pay your rent or on the, you know, cusp of can I pay my rent each month is stressful. It wears on your mental well-being, on your mental health. Wears on your, you know, how you're going to kind of subdue those anxieties with different substances that then later on can build into disorders, substance abuse disorders. So it's a proven, and permanent supportive housing, which is what's happening at Valley Lodge and what I was a strong advocate for at Heritage House and Motel 6 to be, we'll see, but it looks like we've got the funds and ability, is proven success. I went down in 2018, I went down to South Bay. There's been a project down there that they've had same model. I went there. You would never know that these folks were ever unhoused at any point. That they, you know, there's veterans there. There's older people there. There's younger people that, you know, that have those wraparound services. You can't tell that apartment building from that apartment building. And so I understand the unknown is scary. For me, what's scarier is for people who are living in encampments, not just for them, but they don't have services. They don't have the motivation of staying housed, staying warm, having access to utilities and a TV and dignity of life because they're in an encampment, right? So housing is a great incentive to keep it and to keep those wraparound services to work with mental health. And, you know, they need, to work with in terms of recovery, substance abuse recovery, they've got that. So it's very hands-on and it's a lot safer for the public and the businesses than having encampments.
Yeah.
Not to mention, it's just the right thing. I want to play something for you.
Okay.
I got this on the queue. This is someone who is homeless.
Hold it up close to that mic.
Let me see here. Is it playing? Oh. She wrote this piece. She has been unhoused and in encampments for almost 3 years. She's on the list for Valley Lodge. She had trauma when she was a child. She was actually an orphan and adopted and brought here. And as she got older, she started experiencing anxiety issues that evolved and then started using and abusing, and now has substance abuse disorders in addition to mental health disorders. Her homeless experience has been traumatic. Sorry. So I want to share that because these are people and many of them have had very hard lives.
Yeah.
And it's our duty as being privileged to have homes, to have security and stability, that we help them get there too.
It's beautiful. Thank you. Liz Alessio, our guest on the Barry Pod, and I thank you for being here. It was an excellent session.
Thank you, Barry.
This Barry Pod episode recorded on July 3rd of 2023.
You're listening to the Barry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.